Steve, my good man, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, mate. How are you?
I'm wonderful, my friend. I'm wonderful. For those of you listening at home, you might tell that now Steve's hit 40, he's developed a creaky headphone. So we might be getting the odd creak throughout the show. But actually, Steve, it's been quite quiet now.
Yeah, it goes through phases. It's a bit like me. It's just woken up. You know, it's a bit stiff still. Once it loosens up and I've been, you know, had a couple of coffees, it'll be fine.
That'll be fine. And then by the time you get to the end of the show, it's pretty tired and worn out, and it's just going to be making weird noises every time it moves.
Ugh. Yeah, basically, yeah, a bit like me in the mornings coming out and says, I don't know why it does it. It's really annoying. I feel like I can hear it quite loud. I'm very conscious, like, every show. It's like, whoa.
To be fair, it certainly seems to be louder when we chat beforehand. And then when we actually get to recording, I think we both sit a bit stiller. Actually, I think I wave my arms around much more when we're recording.
You
I think
get you... far more animated.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm doing it now. I can't even help it. But you sit very still and calm and like the Zen master who's got their shit together. And I'm a bit like a fly, just a bit too much energy. Don't really know what's happening.
I find, like, we've got to record it set up at work, and we have to do some bits to record to send abroad for how we build these boats. And I'm far more animated like you if I've got a mic.
Ah, okay. Maybe we'll get you a mic, Steve, and you can just stand there.
I don't know what it is. This thing comes on like a boom pole, and I've got hold of it. I'm like pulling it. I'm like doing this, and I get quite like, you've got to put this screw here, and that one goes there. Don't use that fucker. Tef gel on this. And I'm just like pulling this mic around. It's a good job it's covered in pop filters. I'm bashing it. But when we sit here recording, I find that I'm quite conscious of this creak, so I'm like, stay deadly still.
Yeah, you just look very in the zone all the time.
I try to be. I try to like give off this air of professionalism. There you go, professionalism.
There it is, Steve. You've had about four sips of beer and you can't say professionalism anymore.
I know it's really bad. I thought I'd jump on the beer wagon with him tonight, and it's having a detrimental effect already.
It's those strong Italian beers you're drinking, my friend.
Is it strong?
I don't know if it's strong. It's Birra Moretti, isn't it? But I don't know if it's strong. I don't even know if it's actually Italian. That was just a guess.
I think it is. It's got to be Italian or Spanish. 4.6%.
4.6. You're onto the heavy stuff, my friend.
I'm hitting it hard.
I had a Cali Macho, I don't actually know how to say it, the red wine and Coke thing earlier, because we were chatting to a few people in the Facebook group and chatting to a Portuguese guy in there, and it just made me want a drink from the Iberian Peninsula. So here I am. But I didn't have any red wine. I had to use port instead, so it was a little stronger than usual.
Why not?
Yeah.
So you got to compromise when needs must.
Exactly. This show could be a real car crash, Steve. I'm on the heavier booze than usual. You're actually drinking. This could go terribly wrong very quickly.
I've only got one, so I'm going to take it easy with it. Although, once you know you wet the beer gland, you just want a few more.
It's true. It does happen every single time. Last night, I had a beer while I was making cheese. The cheese making went very badly. I don't know what I've done wrong, but I wasted a lot of milk is essentially what happened. But I ended up getting quite drunk while doing it. I mean, Cherie were just dancing in the kitchen, as you do. She was teaching me the steps to S Club 7. So
nice.
We're getting quite into that. And then our housemate just walked into the kitchen as I was climbing every mountain higher, doing the actions. And I did a little spin, and there she was at the kitchen door. I was like, hello, I'm mortified.
Oh, dear, I'll pay. Was she filming?
No, she'd literally just walked in. I was like, oh, I'm getting dance lessons. I can see that.
Need more.
Yeah, I think that's what she was thinking. She never said that. Much more polite than that. But I certainly need more lessons. Yeah.
Oh, I'd have paid you good money to see that.
I remember once, I think I've told you before, Steve, but I was at a salsa class once. And obviously, we had a conversation last week or the week before about how I can't run because of my bum leg. So I also can't dance. So when I dance, it's always a bit of a joke. But we went to this salsa lesson once, and the instructor there found me so hysterical. He was he an Ecuadorian guy, I think? But he was literally pointing and laughing at me in the middle of the lesson. He just
nice.
Couldn't help himself at all. Just pointing and laughing. Everyone else is getting on with it and just pointing and laughing at me.
I'd have smacked him.
I feel like that would have been a bit extreme. But yeah, I'm not a good dancer.
I can't dance for shit. I pretend, you know, I could dance. Well, I often find myself like in the kitchen at night, washing up once the boys got in bed, all the lights on, big patio doors, everyone can see me, and I'm John Travolta giving it the big one. And then I realise, like, everyone can see me. Fuck it, that's all right.
And then that just spurs you on, though, Steve. That's when you go, do you know what? I'm going to fucking own it. And you just carry on.
Exactly. If you can't dance, you know, go for it.
Yeah, and at least I've got own two, the fact you can't dance.
Yeah, you know, and I've got two boys to embarrass when they're older. So I've got to really perfect this dad dancing.
Oh, dear. Your poor, poor kids.
But if they're anything like me, they will not give a shit and they'll probably just join in.
That's probably a fair point.
Yeah, they'll just be like, he looks like a twat, let's go join him.
Wait till your wedding, mate. They are going to be on it.
They will, yes. They're not very old, but they will be there, yes.
Yeah, when I say on it, I mean on the dancing, not on the booze. I'm not going to be sneaking your kids' booze at your wedding. I feel like that might get me in trouble.
Just don't get caught.
And I have it on record here that the father actually said, just don't get caught, and then I was allowed to, so it doesn't matter.
Oh,
anyway, Steve,
don't give your kids alcohol.
Disclaimer, you don't actually booze up the kids. Not okay.
No.
Steve, we're 6 minutes into the show and literally I don't think we've mentioned what the show's even about. Not the topic of just today's show, but I don't think we've actually mentioned MotoGP at all.
It's just the point where we tell them that we're not talking about MotoGP this week.
Never again, actually. We're just going to switch the focus of the show entirely to knitting. That's what we're going to do from now on.
You wait, Friday morning, Facebook group, empty.
Empty or full of people who want to learn to knit. So, this, you know, this could be the new niche, my friend.
This could be a niche. Found our calling, knitting.
But no, not knitting, Steve. We're here today to talk about MotoGP. And Steve, it is literally days away from the season starting. I can't wait.
Mate, by the time everyone's listening to this, it will be tomorrow.
Yeah, and that's if you're listening bang on the day it's out.
Yeah, if you've already watched FP1 and 2, happy fucking days. We're jealous.
Yeah.
Chances are we might not have seen it yet. No spoilers, by the way. Let's put this out there at this minute.
Oh, if you're going to post something. Good point. Facebook group. No spoilers, please.
Yeah, just put, you know, something to start with. Has everyone seen it? Check, because let's not spoil anyone's fun.
Let's lay down a rule, Steve. We'll have to drop this into the Facebook group. I hadn't even thought about it, but this is a good point. We should lay down a rule that we cannot put spoilers in until at least Tuesday, because that gives everyone an entire almost 48 hours to get through and watch the racing.
Yeah, yeah. Unless I forget and just spoil everyone's fun.
Yeah, we don't. You do that. The nice thing is, actually, we can just disallow anything that's got spoilers in until the Tuesday. So that kind of works nicely.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah, yeah. We'll go with the Tuesday rule. I don't know why that popped in there. It just did.
Well, I'm bloody glad it did, Steve, because I wouldn't have thought about it until I logged in and got spoiled the first time. Yeah. Then I'd have been raging.
I've spoiled you several times, and
the most annoying one is the time that you spoiled me by mistake, because I know not to go on social media if I haven't watched the race straight away. I think it was Le Mans. And Petrucci had gone and won, and I hadn't been on social media at all, and Cherie was like, oh, Tim, can you just check this? So I leaned over her shoulder to go to her computer, and there on the screen was Facebook with your post about Petrucci winning the fucking race. I was like, oh my god, I was so annoyed.
I often forget, because I come race that all race weekend, I get very antsy on Friday at work if I know like FP1 and 2 is on and I can't watch it. I come home, you know, boys are waiting at the door. They're looking all happy. I'm like, get out the fucking way. There's bikes to be washed. So I just scoop them up on the way past. And then just like, daddy, look what I've done. I'm like, fuck that. Watch this.
You're like, we've already okayed it. You can drink now, have the beer, go to sleep. I'm going to watch this.
Yeah. You know, Sarah's half destroyed because they've been climbing up the walls all day. I'm just like, just keep quiet in the corner.
You're like, kids, sharp. It's motorbike time.
Right. To be fair to them, half the time, like, they do sit and watch. Enzo will just get right smack in front of the telly and go, that one, want that one to win, want that one to win. Every bike that goes past is a winner.
Bit of a glory hunter then. He's not really committed to a rider and team yet.
Not yet. Although, for some reason, the one he picks out the most, and he has always done it, is a bit of Leish. Don't know why. Always been a Leish.
It could be his year, Steve.
It could be his year. I think it's just the colours. But yeah, always picked out Alesh.
Well, there we go, you see. Turns out he's got a favourite already.
Aye.
Good stuff. Right, Steve. Anyway, let's dive into the show.
We better do.
Otherwise, this what I assumed was going to be quite a short show could be quite a long show.
It's us, mate. It'll be about an hour and a half.
That seems to be the case at the moment. Anyway, I'm Tim. He's Steve. And this is For the Love of MotoGP. So, Steve, as we've just discussed, the racing is very nearly here. And actually, there's not a huge amount of news to talk about just because of the fact that it's nearly here and no one's doing anything except travelling to Qatar.
Yeah, testing is over for those that have already been to Qatar and not gone home. It's just like a chill week, basically.
I think most people went home, didn't they?
I think a lot did. I think the ones that really have stayed are journos, photographers, some team members.
I think Suzuki pretty much all stayed.
Yeah, there's quite a few. I mean, social media at the minute is just flooded. Well, my social media is because they're the only people that I follow.
it's been a very dead winter for Steve's social media, just a few tumbleweeds, and now it's all in.
It is basically. I mean, I've got my own social media, which is basically just all fishing. That's pretty much dead as well at the minute.
It's too cold for fishing, Steve. All of your hobbies are really summer hobbies, aren't they?
I still go fishing all through the winter. I quite like it. A bit of an outdoorsman, as you know. But yeah, MotoGP is really all I follow else other than that, and it's just been desolate.
Yeah.
There's people doing their own thing, and it's livened up, and now it's just gone fucking insane in the last week.
Yeah, it's either, yes, that's it. It's kind of gone insane, the social media front, with just people travelling to the race. But like we say, the news, there's not been a huge amount of news, really.
No. Everyone's just preparing to go, hiding away, keeping themselves safe. That's really it, I think.
Yeah,
we've had a bit of Moto 2 tested and Moto 3. Well, that's all finished now.
Yeah.
So it's just like this little lull, little teeny tiny lull before it all kicks off on Friday.
And it feels a bit like Christmas, Steve, because I'm so excited now. And yet literally every minute of every day is dragging. We've all been in lockdown for like a year. And this feels like the longest period of time I've had to wait for anything. The next 3 days, I'm starting to like climb the walls. I'm losing my shit a little bit because I just can't wait now.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. Did you know it's a year today since the UK went into lockdown?
Yes, I did. We had a ridiculous Memorial Day today, but let's not get into that.
No, let's not do that. I just thought I'd bring that anniversary up.
Yeah.
Because it's bloody annoying. Anyway, back on topic.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of lockdowns and things, I guess, Steve, I'll just mention quickly, I've spent the entire week thinking about the vaccine thing. I know last week I said I wasn't really sure. I don't know how I feel about it, but I've come round to the idea now. I do think it's a very good idea. I think MotoGP going to these countries is good for everyone's entertainment and that bit of mental health. Like we saw stuff with the football or soccer or whatever you want to call it happening throughout Europe. And that was good for everyone. Just something to rally around, something to think about and talk about. But they've got to keep everyone safe while they're doing it. And this is the most sensible way of doing that. So I'm on board with the idea. And it does mean that these riders that are mostly European but are from all over the world, the jabs that they're getting are no longer taking away from their local populations, which is also good. So the priorities are working better at home with that as well. So yeah, I'm on board with the idea. I go back on my skepticism of it. I just don't like things generally when I hear them the first time. That's just saw me really. But now I'm on board with it. It's all okay in Tim's book, and that's all anyone wants, isn't it, to be okay in Tim's book.
Exactly. That is the book we all want to be good in. That's the one, you know, I'm pretty sure I've got a load of gold stars in there.
Steve, you've got almost the most gold stars out of anyone, mate.
Woo, happy with it.
You're the only person that talks to me reliably, mate. All my other friends just like that, I don't want to know.
Yeah. I tried having a conversation with a guy at work the other day who is in the Facebook group, and I found out he's actually in the Fantasy League. He joined up. Absolutely knows shit all about motorbikes, never watches it, has just done it for the fun of it, and he's jumped on board.
Good stuff. Happy days.
Yeah,
Does that mean he's been listening to the show, Steve? Is he just listening to you chat shit all the time? Like, I really don't know what Steve and Tim talk about, but it's a thing.
They don't... They get, I'll open up something here. We have site radios at work, and I tend to play the podcast at work.
That's my favourite thing. Oh, you're inflicting I've that upon out. All of your workmates. I would never inflict this upon... I mean, who do I actually work with, realistically? Cherie. So she would just walk out if I tried to inflict this upon her.
I have... I felt like my last welding job, I could put my headphones in, I could listen to the show back and see what I thought. Now, different job, back to boat building. I can't. Can't put my headphones in. So I got the radio, plugged it in, and I just found myself listening to the show back, and it's become like a regular thing to do it at work. Give me time.
Okay.
But then I found like I was working further away from a radio, so I was cranking it up. Actually dawned on me about 2 weeks ago that I was three boats away from my radio. I could still hear it plain as day.
Ah, nice. People like must work with you must be like, for fuck's sake, he keeps putting his own voice on the fucking radio.
I did turn it down. I felt quite bad when I realised what was going on. I was like, oh, I fucking sound like a twat. off.
Oh dear, I wouldn't worry about it, Steve. I think you sound great, mate, and that's the important thing.
Cheers, buddy.
Right, so what have we seen? This news came out last week, actually, Steve, but it came out just after we'd recorded, so we didn't really talk about it at all, but it was this Dovi Aprilia test.
Yes, that sort of... Well, we did speculate about this a few shows back, but it's all been very quiet. I mean, Dovi's been very quiet. Then all of a sudden, it's just come out that he's going to have a three-day test with Aprilia.
Yeah, at Jerez. And originally, I think the reporting on this was pretty shit, because it made it sound like... this was Dovi's, and actually the MotoGP reporting literally said, sensational return to MotoGP.
Yeah.
Which it's not, is it? He's not an official test rider for the team. He's not really having any sort of return. He's having 3 days riding the Aprilia RSGP 21 or whatever it is around Jerez. Is it going to be more than that, do we think? Or is it just, Dovi knows what the fuck he's talking about, so Aprilia are like, right, let's just whack him a couple of €100,000 and let's just take his advice because we need something right now.
Yeah, I think, like, personally, with the, like you said, the handle of that article, it's just clickbait. Mm-hmm. Anyone who's scrolling through is going through Dovi's sensational return. Fuck, got to read that.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, oh my God, is Marquez not coming back? Has he got Marquez's ride? No.
Exactly. That's almost, if you were to speak to a professional journalism, it's catchy, it's punchy, you're going to draw people in. It doesn't matter what it says. It is technically a return to MotoGP because he's on a MotoGP bike.
Is it sensational? Can anything to do with Aprilia be sensational?
Not unless he storms it in the first year, which then it's a very preemptive headline.
Yeah, quite. I tell you what, imagine if that did happen and he just jumped on like halfway through the season. They're like, bye, Salvadori. We're going to have Dovi now. And Dovi just does half a season and just wins everything.
That would be amazing. How pissed off would you be if you were Salvadori?
I mean, well, yeah, assuming you'd probably have been getting good results until this point anyway, so maybe they wouldn't be binning you off.
No, that's true. I think this could be a little test. I think it's going to be a test to see what Dovi could do. I'm sure they know deep down, they need someone to pull them out of the doldrums.
So do we think maybe it's more of a test for Dovi then? Is it Dovi testing Aprilia? And he's like, yeah, okay. And if it's good, I'll carry on. If it's shit, I won't.
He's got nothing else to do. I mean, what is he going to do? If he wants a way back into MotoGP, this could be his only chance.
Yeah.
You know, he's still a damn good rider. Probably... You could argue too good for that bike. It's a way in. It's a foot in the door.
But then that bike, at least in Aleix's hands, so far in testing, looks like it might be a heavily improved version of any Aprilia we've ever seen.
Exactly. And which is going to be quite, what's the best way to put it? Quite appetizing to him. Mm. You know, if it was the Aprilia of 2 years ago, you're going, no way.
Well, I mean, let's not forget, now, he literally turned down a contract with them. They offered him a race seat and he said no.
Yeah, on the basis that bike hasn't improved. Now he's had time to see what Aleix has put it through in testing. He sort of maybe has pricked his ears up, what his fancy, and he's like, actually, they might have something here.
And maybe it's just the idea that off-season's done, nearly done. He's like, fuck, I'm really not riding next year. I'm not ready to stop.
No, He could have actually got off that bike and thought, or the Ducati and thought, nah, yeah, I can retire. Yeah. I can check this in. I've got enough money. I don't need to worry. But we know he's a rider. He's got the rider's instinct, the rider's drive to race.
Yeah, exactly.
And if that's not, you know, if that glass is still half full, it's going to sit there and it's going to eat away.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that last pint at the bar when you've had too much. It's still got half full and you know that you want to finish it.
You know it's going to give you a banging headache in the morning, but you're going to do it anyway.
Exactly. But who knows? He's got the test coming up. Let's see what happens. If he comes back, if it's whatever role it may be at Aprilia, if it gets him back in, then good and well.
Yeah, that's it. And I'll tell you, here's one for you, Steve. There's been a lot of people discussing whether or not this is literally an audition for Lorenzo Salvadori's seat. And will, you know, we'll get to the Jerez test, Dovi will fucking storm it, and then Aprilia will be like, sorry, Salvadori, you've had, you know, three races this year, but bye-bye, we're going to have Dovi in. Is that okay? Or is that Aprilia... Is it okay because in the public perception we want to see Dovi back, or is it actually Aprilia doing what Aprilia do and just fucking over their riders that they're not happy with?
Just Aprilia being Aprilia in my eyes.
Yeah.
I've said some harsh things about Aprilia in the past, all the way they treated like Lowe's, just sacking them off. We've seen them, they don't seem very loyal to their riders, and they seem like the kid in the playground who will just hang out with anyone and show no loyalty.
Yeah, the only person it seems that they've showed loyalty to, and I mean, all of this is obviously speculation, this might not be what's happening, but I feel like I've started us on a rabbit hole to rage at Aprilia, so we're just going to roll with it. But the only...
Standard show.
Yeah, exactly. Just make shit up and roll with it. The only person they seem to have shown loyalty to... I mean, they've shown loyalty to Aleix Espargaró, certainly, but I think that's just his outright pace. The only other person they seem to have shown loyalty to was their Italian rider who was a race winner for Ducati, was a podium sounder for Suzuki, and then took some steroids and got booted off the grid. But they stood by Andrea Iannone for the entire time until it was 100% confirmed he wasn't coming back. And it was that felt like a weird Aprilia move. It would feel even weirder now if, after doing arguably the right thing by their riders, they've just gone, do you know what, actually, we don't like this doing the right thing by people. It's not okay. We'll just get rid of Salvadori. We'll have Dovi.
I personally think they will go for whatever they believe is the best option, no matter what. They have obviously... We know what Iannone was capable of. He was a race winner. You know, alongside Aleix, all the shit went down with the drugs.
You sound like you're implicating them both in some weird drug deal at the moment. All that shit went down with the drugs.
Well.
And I mean, Aleix is a cyclist, and we do know cycling is a very dirty, dirty sport. So I'm just saying. Just saying. No, I'm not saying at all. I don't think Aleix is doping. Let's not
that
get up for libel here. That was
to be doping.
Yeah. I think doping helps you get shredded, actually. But that's not what I'm suggesting. I don't want to be sued for this. So let's just move on.
Let's just leave that right there. I just think Aprilia have got themselves in a position where they've really only got one very, very strong full-time rider. Now Iannone's gone. And they will pretty much do whatever they can to get a stronger rider in, if it means sacking off one who's already there.
Yeah, and you know, Salvadori, while he obviously is a fast, fast motorcycle rider, do you think he's a MotoGP rider?
I think if he comes out and doesn't finish within 4 or 5 places of Aleix every race, they will see that as not good enough. And then if Dovi comes in, even matches Aleix, they're going to take Dovi over Salvadori.
Yeah.
And then it's bye-bye Salvadori.
Yeah, I'm just not convinced he's a MotoGP rider, man. I think, like I say, he's certainly a fast, fast motorcycle racer. And you have to be super fast to even be in the conversation as to whether you're a MotoGP rider or not. But I don't think he's MotoGP fast, man. And maybe it's just the bikes don't really suit him. He's nursing an injury. We know that. He's only done three Grand Prix races, full stop. He didn't come up through the Grand Prix paddock. He came up through superbikes. So, you know, it's a huge learning curve. But he's not shown anything that I've looked at yet and gone, This guy's going to be good. It's just a, he's just a prettier rider, and they'll get rid of him soon enough. Like, there's nothing exciting about him.
No, no, he's not come up and just caught your eye. Mm. He's just gone about his business. He's a good enough rider for Aprilia. He's not a good enough rider to take Aprilia and push it on.
Yeah, that might be a good point. I like that. He's a good enough rider for Aprilia where they are and where they were, but he's not going to be moving them forward. Yeah, I like that, Steve.
I think Aprilia are looking for someone to take them forward. Not to push the bike, but to drag the bike.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm with you, certainly. And that moves us nicely on then, Steve, to our next topic here. And that is someone that really will drag everything they can get out of a bike. And that is one Marc Márquez.
Aye.
Now, we know Marc Márquez. We were quite excited by the fact he might be here for the first race. Ooh, he could be. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. Is he going to be here? Is he not? No, 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 he's not. He's not going to be here for the first race. No. And now, again, dodgy reporting here, because the headline on MotoGP.com seemed to say that Marc Márquez will be missing the first two races, is what the headline was. And then when you read the article, it was like, he's definitely going to miss the first race, probably will miss the second.
It's a little bit misleading, isn't it? You read the headline article, and it's like, Marc Márquez is to miss Qatar Grand Prix.
Mm-hmm.
When you read it like that, Qatar Grand Prix, to me, says both races won and two.
Well, there was literally a headline that said he will miss the first two races of the season.
Yeah, I did see that somewhere. But it's only said he's out for the first race. So somebody needs to write a bit more factual headline. But that's never going to happen. To be fair, I was getting very excited by the possibility of him coming back. And I think a lot of other people were. Most of the world will have been. We've both said that, you know, whenever he comes back, we're going to show him a lot more love and support. I am quite gutted that he's not going to be back. You know, I'm assuming he's going to be back for Portimao or try to be back for Portimao. But it opens up the whole host of scenarios now, like we've spoken about before. You know, how is it going to affect the other riders? They're going to have to like take this as their opportunity and just have to go for it. You want 25 points out of this. But all we know for sure is he's definitely missing race one.
Yeah, he'll definitely miss race one. Probably will miss race two. And I actually, Steve, I actually think this could make a more exciting season because it's a long season this year. What are we looking at? A 19 race season?
It is long.
And I say long, like that's the same as the 2019 season. But it just feels long compared to the 14 races of last year. But I think if Marc Márquez can come back and be Marc Márquez, he can drop three or four races at the start of a 19 race season and he can still challenge for the title.
All right, look at the season we saw last year. So higgledy-piggledy and topsy-turvy that anyone who can come in, even missing three, four, five races, and then be consistent enough or more consistent than everyone else is in with a banging shout.
Mm, certainly. And I think it could be almost a like a Valentino Rossi 2006 season, behind a long way by the halfway point, but then, you know, clawing it back every single race for the second half of the year, clawing those points back to the point that arrive at the final round and all of a sudden you're leading the championship.
Exactly.
And we all know for Rossi that didn't go to plan, but...
No, certainly didn't. Not that year. Bless him. That must be a fly in his ointment. But there we go. Different story. Different person.
Yes, quite. Let's not get the two goats confused at the moment. Steve's coming out with fighting words now. There's only one goat.
There is. Dave's on the way to work.
Literally a goat. He just sits there in the field. It is Norfolk after all, my friend. But how do we think this, the Marc Márquez not coming back for the first one, maybe the first two races, how does that affect every other rider, do we think? Do we think that they're going to go out and they're going to be like, right, fuck, I need to get out now? Like Jack Miller, for example. He's kind of everyone's favourite for Qatar. Is Jack Miller there thinking, right, I need to get out now. I need to win, get those 50 points in the bag, get as many points on Marc Márquez as I can so that when he's back and if he comes back fighting fit later, I've got a buffer? Or are they going to be thinking more along the lines of, oh, well, let's just take the points now. If I have to score 13 points. I'll take the 13 because Marquez isn't scoring anything anyway.
I think you'd be silly not to look down the road of he will be back, so I need to get as many points as possible. But points win prizes, and if you're going to push, there's more risk to bin it.
That's a fair point. So we'd be looking, I guess this is two, and I imagine people will be taking both strategies, won't they? I imagine Johan Mir will be going, I'll take the fucking 13 points.
Yeah.
Whereas someone like Pol Espargaró might go, fuck, I need those 25.
Yeah, I think it will be out of the blocks a rat race. It will be a real scrap. And then once the tyres start to go off, whoever's got the mental sense to think, I need to bring this home over the person who goes, I need to bring home 25 points and risk it. I think the person who's a bit more conservative could end up at the end of the day being the one who is in a better position at the end of the season. But that's with 1,000 different algorithms for a supercomputer to work out that my head can't do because I can't predict what's going to happen on race day.
I mean, that's fair. Although your argument sort of makes sense, especially if you look at it historically. I mean, by historically, I mean last year. You look at last year, you see that there were riders that would go out all guns blazing. The Quartararos, for example, win the first two races. And then you have some poor races. You win another race. You have some poor races. Your results are either wins or terrible. Or you look at the Johan Mir way of doing things, which was just take the 13 points, just take the 13 points, just take the 13 points, and that won out. Can it win out over a longer season? Maybe, maybe not. Can it win out over Marc Marquez? Not in his prime, but this year, maybe.
That the only sort of thing I have with that is that strategy worked on a season where we knew Marquez wasn't going to be back.
Mm.
They could all sit back in comfort and go, right, we're not going to see him this year. He's got the little bit of trump card in this year, knowing that he'll be back, but they don't know when he's going to be back.
Mm.
And so it's that uncertainty which is going to niggle at them. I'm sure it will. You know, if you become complacent and think, I'll take 10 points because he's not going to be back next weekend, and then suddenly the following weekend he is back and you only score 10 points, but he gets 15, your opportunity's gone for the last however many races where you could have pushed a bit further. And then come the end of the season when he's level on points, you're going to be kicking yourself because you didn't push.
Yeah, that's fair. So it's just quite a lot to think about, isn't it? It's Marc Marquez creates quite a psychological problem, I think, for all of the riders.
Yeah, he does. It's like, because he's so good, he could basically post a picture of himself at home in his leathers, in his Barker lounger, smoking a pipe. And that would just play havoc with everyone.
I would love to see it. The Barry Sheen type photo with just Marc Marquez.
Yeah, just the levers, no gloves, no boots. Next to a roaring fire, big Barker lounger, and just a pipe. See you next weekend, lads.
Just a pipe. Supermodel on the sofa.
Yeah, you know, just
the real Barry Sheen way of doing things. And I think people would be like, what the fuck is happening here? Everyone would be so confused about it. I imagine Jack Miller would be like, oh, I can't, let's share the pipe, mate. Share the pipe.
Yeah, probably. Like, where's the booze at? He'd be sat next to the bird on the sofa, probably. But, you know, anything that bloke does at the minute is playing with everyone's heads, which is only working in his favour.
Yeah, 100% right. I imagine he probably knew full well he wasn't going to be back for this race. And actually, it's just been to play the media, to play the riders, and to play the fans in a way. Like, it's got us talking, Steve. I don't think I'm under no illusion that you and I are media for MotoGP. I'm fully aware we're not. We're just two friends that like to chat shit and decided one day, weirdly, that other people would want to listen to this shit. So... And we've spoken about it for ages. It's not just us, is it? It is the official media. It is the other riders. It's clearly you and I. And I'm sure it's everyone else that's listening at home as well. We've all been talking about it. Marquez didn't have to come back. He just had to put his name on that provisional entry list. And all of a sudden, his brand is just worth a shitload more because we're talking about him again.
Exactly. Everything that bloke does at the minute is golden. If he's on track, off track, he can just orchestrate such panic.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're right. All this testing of a pit bike, testing the special Honda, and then having a private test at whatever track that was. That is, you know, it probably was to try
to test.
It was Catalonia. Yeah, you're right. It probably was underlined to check the strength of his arm. He's not going to step it up from a mini bike to a bigger bike to a bigger bike if he thinks it's not worth the risk. But at the same time, what that does to everyone else is just keep turning the tap, keep turning the screws, keep thinking, you know. And he probably thought, I ain't going to ride, but let's do it anyway.
And actually, I hadn't really considered this until just now, but it's Catalunya he was at. Catalunya's just had a new turn 10. He won't have ridden the Catalunya circuit as it is. So if he's ready to go by that time in the year, by Catalunya, and he's riding, most of the riders have ridden the new layout. He hadn't until this point. So the fact they chose Catalunya makes me very, very confident he will be back sooner rather than later, because he's going to be back for that round. The reason he went there to do the test, right? Maybe it's just to do with Repsol and they had easy access to Catalunya at that time. But I think it's more likely that he went to make sure he knew at least the layout of that new corner.
Yeah. Do a bit of groundwork.
Exactly. Because if you think if he was confident he was going to be back earlier than that, would he try and book Portimao? Or no, probably not, because I don't think he'd be allowed to, because it's too close to the actual race for the test.
I don't think the time would be right with that one.
Yeah, I'm just trying to make a conspiracy theory out of something, Steve, and maybe there's nothing there, but I'm going for it. I'm trying.
I'm not really a conspiracy theory person unless it's MotoGP. Then I can sit here for fucking hours and pull things apart.
And then all of a sudden the New World Order are actually running Dorna and the Lizard Men are actually in charge of Honda. It's very strange.
That's basically what happens. Yeah, I've got one of those big boards you like seeing CSI with all like pictures on it and bits of string going everywhere.
And you're weirdly, Suzuki are from a world with a flat earth. Who knew?
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's no Rona.
Anyway, let's move on, Steve. We'll move on from one goat to the next, shall we? Valentino Rossi. We had some interviews out with him and some news from him recently. There's been a lot of talk about Valentino Rossi, to be fair.
There has.
Going into a satellite team for only the second time in his career. He started with a satellite team. It looks like he's going to end his career with a satellite team. Quite nice, full circle. Shame it's not Honda satellite team to really commit to the full circle thing. That would be gold.
I did think that. I sat there the other day just like shit going through my head. I was like, how good would it be if he did go full circle and just had a season at LCR?
Can you imagine? He's gone, do you know what, actually, all that shit I slung at Honda, I take it back because they're going to give me one good paycheck for the last year.
Yeah, let's go full circle, finish this career out, get Elton John playing the Circle of Life and it's all good.
But yes, he's been doing some interviews with La Repubblica.
Yep.
The Italian magazine, I think.
The
Italian publication. We'll call it a publication.
Yeah.
It was just a discussion on his future career, what this year is going to be like. And he was saying in that he wants to be riding for at least another 2 years, but he will. There's some caveats to that on there. He's going to see how this year goes. And as long as he's in the top five, as long as he's competing for podiums, the odd race win, he'll carry on for at least another year after this one.
Yeah, that's reassuring to the fans. It's really nice to hear that he's still as motivated as ever. And it's obviously clear he still wants to be at the top. Doesn't want to be riding just circulating. He wants to be up the pointy end, which is really, really good. Because, he is getting on.
He's older than you, Steve.
He is older than me. I like that fact. I don't like the fact that if I was on that grid, I'd be the second oldest person there. That would be quite scary.
I think I'd be one of the... I would probably be in the bottom half as well, Steve. And I'm not even 30, so it's quite a young grid at the moment.
It is a very young grid at the minute, but I quite like it. I like the sort of... the circle that we have, should we say, there's sort of some real youth and then there's some real age in there, a lot of experience. There's a lot of experience in the young lads as well. There's a lot of different people, different age groups, and it's quite a nice mix on there at the minute. But it is good. Getting back to Ross, it is really, really good and encouraging that he wants to carry on. But the day will come when he has to go, and that will be a dark, dark day.
It's funny because I'm at a weird point that I didn't see Rossi in his prime. I've only kind of jumped on board the bandwagon afterwards. I was never watching MotoGP as it was happening to watch Rossi become a champion. And yet I still feel the weird fanboy connection to him that everyone else does. I feel like when he says he's going to retire, I'm going to have a moment of, oh, that's pretty sad. But it's going to pass pretty quick. I'm going to get quite excited about who's going to come up and take his place. I'm going to get excited about the young guys coming in because I think they are more exciting than him. But there will be a sad pang for me. It's just a weird thing with Rossi. I think I'd be happy to see him go, but I am a weird fanboy, even though I never saw him in his prime.
It's hard not to like him. It's really, really hard not to like it. I don't think there's many people that you could talk to about MotoGP that would not turn around and say, I generally do not like Valentino Rossi. Most people, we said before, if you say a sport you think is one person, MotoGP is Rossi, or moving into Marc Marquez at the minute.
But it is still Rossi, isn't it? He is the Tiger Woods, the Michael Jordan, like he is the Lewis Hamilton, the competitor that transcends the sport.
Yeah, he just the name goes together.
Yeah,
so it is good. It's really good that he wants to carry on. I hope it's 2 more years. I really, really do.
I hope it's 2 competitive years. I don't want him to have a competitive year. Exactly. I'd rather if he has a shit year this year, just go. And actually, I would rather he went last year after a shit year than had another shit year. Like, just, you've had your shit year, it's time to go. At least Pedroza hung it out and won a race every single year until that final year. Rossi hasn't won a race since 2017?
No. I really want to see your idea of the 100th win, get on that podium, mic in hand, that's it, I'm done.
Or the 200th podium.
He's 200th podium.
Win, sorry, that's he's got a few wins off Ago at the moment.
Yeah, so 200th podium, mic drop, gone.
Yeah, I would enjoy that. I think that would be a fine, fine ending to a fine, fine career.
Yeah, that would be good. That would be good. But yeah, getting back to the interview, he had some swipes as well, didn't he? He put some claws out there.
He was getting his jabs in at a 1-1 Marquez, wasn't he?
He was, yes. I quite enjoyed it. I only saw a little bit, sort of reading through it, and I was like, ooh, feisty.
Yeah, so his exact line was, they were chatting about Marc Marquez on his return, how he's going to be, and his line was, his absence, the other guys have grown a lot, and they're not afraid of him anymore. So he's quite clearly laying down the marker that when Marc Marquez comes back, he's going to be raced hard, and the young guys are going to potentially be beating him. And I think this is as much psychological warfare against Marquez as Marquez saying, I might be back. Oh, no, I'm not going to be back. It's the same level of psychological warfare going on. And now it's not anymore the wily veteran Rossi against the, at the time, only the two-time world champion Marc Marquez, or two-time MotoGP world champion Marc Marquez in that 2015 spat, which you would argue Rossi sort of won because Marquez had the breakdown through the whole season. He crashed a lot and maybe the pressure from Rossi was a huge part of that. Now Rossi is having the battle of wits with a guy who's a 6-time MotoGP world champion, who's the fastest guy we've ever seen on a MotoGP bike. And will this battle of wits, will this psychological warfare, will it still work?
I think it would now with Marquez, because he knows he's weaker now and he knows that he's been away for a long time. And he also knows that it's going to take him a long time to be fully race fit.
But he also knows that Valentino Rossi knows all that. So it's a weird thing because he's like, I know that you know that I know that you know. It's this weird back and forth between the two. I think it's going to be quite fascinating to watch because they're never going to be friends again while they're both still on the grid.
No, absolutely not. While they're both racing, they're going to hate each other. I think there's more to be learned in Marquez's point of view, because he's got a lot of new riders. The bikes have all changed. The riders that are on the grid have had time to acclimatise to these bikes, get used to each other, whereas Marquez has got all this to walk back into. Mm. So, plus the fact that he's got to learn his ability again. He can't just get on this bike and go, right, I'm going to be exactly the same as I was 2 years ago, because he's not. And I think Rossi is right in a way. These guys are now going to know that he is weaker than what he was. But he's got to come into the grid and be as feisty as what they are. He can't just walk in and go, I've got this.
And it's an interesting point again, isn't it? Because can he be as feisty as they are? Can he be fairing bashing? Can he be pushing it so hard he's going to crash at least once a weekend, finding the limit? Because if his arm's weak, he's going to be wanting to protect that. As he lost his huge advantage that he knows he can crash. Marquez has always known he can crash. Is he now not going to know he can crash? Is he going to be worried about crashing? Is he going to lose 4% on his lap time because he can't risk the crash?
I think you're right. I think he's going to have to become that guy now that just doesn't crash and take that risk. Because like you say, that is going to be a massive, massive weakness. And let's face it, one more break like he's had, and that's it, curtains.
Certainly.
He won't come back. So that is going to be his biggest downfall. That is always going to be his head. If he starts getting a fight with someone and he starts getting bashed about, he's going to have to be so, so confident that he can win that.
Yeah.
And it's only going to take that one little wrong move where you just get a little, you get a clutch lever or a brake pedal or anything just niggled and he goes down hard. Curtains. Game over. I mean, what if he goes down at the end of the straight at Mugello?
Like he's done so in the past. He had a huge crash there when he was, I mean, I think it was 2013. I think it was his first year.
That is, with his injury he's already got, that's now a career-ending crash. Mm.
And I mean, in the first place, Steve, that's a crash that would have killed you and I. The fact he's Marquez is why he even walked away from that, let alone race the next day. But yeah, that's the kind of crash that with, now he's already injured, done, the arm, done.
Out of it. So if he finds himself in a battle coming up over that crest, in my eyes, he's got to surrender.
Yeah,
will he? But the racer is not going to surrender.
That's it. Will he even be rolling off without realizing he's doing it? Will he get to that crest and he thinks he's flat, but actually he's at 98% throttle? He's already starting to roll off, even if he thinks he's flat. Maybe that's going to happen. Who knows? I don't even know if that's a thing that does happen, but I imagine the brain will trick you into thinking you're doing something if it'll keep you happy. The brain is very good at protecting itself, whether or not you want it to.
Exactly. We all have a survival mode instinct built in, no matter what you're doing. It doesn't matter if it's your most favourite thing in the world. If your brain thinks, right, I've got to get out of here, you're gone. You're out.
Yeah, exactly. So, and you might even not even know you're doing it.
Exactly. The subconscious kicks in and you just... I had a great thing said to me once when I was doing a management course. Guy said to me, you have 100,000 different things your body does automatically. And he just said, if you want to screw with someone's head, just say to them, are you breathing now? And you'll start working on your breathing. Whereas you'll do it for the rest of the day, you won't even think about it.
Yeah, exactly. Because now I'm literally thinking about my breathing. And I've never done that. Yeah. And now I'm trying to stop thinking about my breathing. It turns out I'm not actually breathing.
And you can't.
So I'm like, God, I need to think about this now. I think Steve might have just killed me if I can't keep thinking about breathing.
Oh, so if also it works in public. If you want to win an argument, just say to that person, are you breathing?
Oh, I'm confused.
It works. I've done it myself.
Okay, Steve, right, my friend, let's take a quick break because I'm not going to lie, those beers have really gone through me and I need a pee. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have a quick discussion about what we've seen in Moto2 and Moto3 testing, and then we'll dive into our Qatar race preview.
We'll go for it, mate.
Good stuff. Right, guys, bear with us. We will be back with you in just a few moments. Thank you for bearing with us there, guys. We're back. I've got a beer, which I've not prepared to open with one hand, but now it's ready. No, it's not. Yes, it is.
Seamless.
And Steve performed a small operation on his headphones there. So while my beer opening was terrible, Steve has fixed the creak. It turns out you hit 40 and you can still fix the creaks.
You can. Yes. Just not on yourself.
Not on his, I promise, Steve, that's the last of my Your 40 jokes for this episode.
That's all right. I've got used to it this week. My sister got me an inflatable Zimmer frame, which is still up. So
nice. I like an inflatable Zimmer frame. A useless but funny gift, and that's what we all want in life.
Yeah, don't worry. I've kept it for when you turn 40.
God, if you give me the same Zimmer frame you were given for your 40th, more than 10 years later, Steve, I will be very, very impressed.
It's in the cupboard, wrapped and ready.
God, I hope that's true. Right, so Steve, we also saw Moto2 and Moto3 testing. Now, we're not going to dive into this deeply. I'm just going to give you my overviews, what I thought of what I saw of testing, which I'm going to be honest, wasn't a huge amount. I didn't see a huge amount of it. I've read a lot of the coverage, but I'm just going to run through what I feel about it so far. And what I feel about it so far, Steve, for both classes, is it's going to be a great year.
It's looking like both Moto2 and Moto3 are going to be fucking epic. Yep. They don't disappoint on a normal year anyway, but the times are so close this year. it's just going to be nuts.
They're closer than I think I've ever seen them, Steve. Like Moto2, 20 riders were covered by a second in the combined times. And I know it's testing, combined times don't really count, but at least five or six of those riders were covered by fractions of a tenth in their race pace. Like, it's going to be so, so tight if everyone can stay on their fucking bikes.
That's it. As long as they keep it rubber side down, it is going to be incredible. We are going to be treated to some awesome, awesome races this year.
Yep, and we'll get to see that banging Mark VDS livery going around the track, and I cannot wait for that.
I'm looking forward to a lot of liveries in a lot of the classes this year. It's just going to be awesome.
Mm.
Really, really is. Fucking COVID, don't get in the way.
Yeah, quite, exactly. And it is a concern, isn't it, that the idea of the COVID in Europe right now, I know you guys listening in Europe are suffering right now, certainly worse than we are in the UK. And you know, let's hope MotoGP happens, but let's hope it happens only if it's safe to do so. And we've already discussed the vaccines and stuff. We won't keep getting into COVID. But but Moto2, anyway, Steve, we've got, I reckon there's five or six guys up for a decent title fight this year. And I think,
absolutely,
looking at what we've seen, looking at their past performances, this could be another year where we go down to Valencia with three or four guys still in for the fight.
Bloody hope so, because last year was awesome.
Yeah.
If we could get the same thing this year, I'd be so, so happy.
Yeah.
I like Moto2, I really do. It's just the whole day, every Sunday, race day is cracking at the minute.
Yes, it is, exactly. And like we said, I love Moto3 as well, man. I love Moto3. Moto2 I quite enjoy because you see people's personalities coming out more. They are almost MotoGP riders at this point. And it's fun just to see who's going to be where next year, which of these guys is going to come up. Moto3 is kind of fun because it's just insane. Everything about it is just fucking bonkers. These guys, some of these guys are 16 years old, which is already mental. Can you imagine, Steve, have you got a 16-year-old relative or you know any 16-year-olds at the moment? Not in a creepy way, Steve. I'm not trying to incriminate you for anything weird here.
There are a few 16-year-old apprentices at work.
Would you trust them with a motorcycle?
I wouldn't trust them with a screwdriver, mate.
Exactly. It's bonkers. I have to work with them.
There's a few that come in and I'm just like, yeah, he's here.
It's mad, isn't it? They're so, so young. And I think 16's a pretty dangerous age, because I think when I was 16, I thought, that's it. I'm pretty mature now. This is probably as mature as I'm ever going to be. And I look back on it now, I'm like, Jesus, twat. And I'm sure in 10 years, I'll look back on me now and be like, fucking, what was that twat talking about?
Yeah.
But at 16, I didn't have that foresight, man. I thought I knew literally everything. I cannot imagine. And I know they're not all 16. And most of them are probably close to 18. But still, 18, you're still a bit of a twat. At 18, let's just put it out there. We were all twats at 18. Everyone who's going to be 18 will be a twat. And yet we're trusting them to ride 150 miles an hour on a fucking motorbike round a circuit. 30 of them. That's fine.
It's great, isn't it? I was, you know, road riding on a 50cc in the UK, and I thought I was the tits. I really did. This thing would hardly break 45 miles an hour. But I thought I was the bollocks.
That's exactly how I felt on my little 50cc.
Yeah, and you give me another 105 miles an hour, I'd have been dead.
Yeah,
100%. Even around a circuit. I thought I was the Billy Bollocks on everything. And you got everything. You got your nan going past you. In a car, I thought I was fucking it. I could not even comprehend the level of maturity that some of these guys need at 16, 17, 18 years old to do this.
And you speak, it's the closest racing on the grid, isn't it? Like of the weekend, they're so tight. And it doesn't happen in Moto2 and MotoGP that you'll get a pack of literally 12 riders fighting for the win.
Yeah, these guys are so, so mature for that age. It's incredible. I know they've been in racing for a long time, so they've got used to it. But even so, your hormones are raging at that age, and you get the sudden rush of blood and the urge to just, go full Rambo on it. Mm. And these guys don't. They can all break within a thousandth of a second of each other. They are so, so mature and so, so intelligent for their age.
Unless your name's Romano Fenati, and then you'll just, pull someone else's brake lever.
Yeah, I mean, we all have that little moment, that fleeting moment where, the devil on your shoulder kicks in.
But most of us can't ignore it, except him.
I can, except when it's in my basket and I have to hit buy.
but that's fine. That's a very different story to literally pulling someone else's brake lever, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, he could have done anything at that moment, but they all get it. 99.9% of them are so, so mature and intelligent and mature beyond their years.
Yeah.
And then you get that one. There's always that one kid in the playground who is just a knob.
Yeah, but good at it as well, because like Romano Fenati is someone that he's a very quick guy, very naturally talented,
yeah.
But he's a bit of a dick.
Yeah, he is that one that you really, you want to get on with, but you just can't.
I wouldn't even think I'd like to get on with him. I don't think, he's one of the few that if I met, I might pretend I didn't know who he was. Yeah. I think most of them, I'd be a bit starstruck, whether they're one of the 16-year-old lads or whether it's Valentino Rossi, I'm going to be pretty starstruck. I might just pretend I don't know who Romano Fenati is. I don't think I want to meet him.
I got a feeling he could be that guy where I really, really want to hate him, but I can't.
But he's actually really... Jeremy Clarkson is that guy for me, Steve. I really want to hate him, but I also really want to go for a beer with him.
Yes, exactly. I would probably be trying my hardest. Inside, I'd be like, yeah, you're pretty cool. Outside, like, just, you know... Giving it that air of, I really don't like you, but I just can't do it.
That's how I feel about Aaron Canet, actually. I think every part of me wants to hate him, and yet every time I look at him, I quite like him.
See, I have a bit of a problem with Canet. I would probably get a restraining order, because I would strip that boy naked just to see how much tattoo there is on there.
I promise, officer, I was only doing it to see how much tattoo was on there. Oh, Steve, you are going to be getting yourself in trouble, my friend.
I just want to know. I was like, strip, let's have a look at it.
At least you know, I guess, he's covered in tattoos, so he is well over 18, Steve. So you won't get arrested for it. You'll just have me pointing fingers and calling you a massive weirdo.
Yeah, I would be at a safe distance because I wouldn't want to go anywhere near his thing. But I'd be just like, right, this is it, the full thing. What's this tattoo look like?
I bet, to be fair, actually, I bet, and there probably are a lot of topless photos and stuff of him, but I would, it's one of those intriguing things, actually, with that amount of tattoo, I'm like, right, come on then, I would like to see him naked, because I just kind of want to see it all.
Yeah, that's all I say. As soon as I see it, I'll like, put some fucking clothes on.
You know, fucking freak, what are you doing that for?
But I do like that boy's tattoos, and I like him as a whole. I find him... I think it is the tattoo thing. Quite intriguing.
What I think is quite funny about him, we've moved very far on from Moto3 to now we talk about Moto2 rider. But what I think is quite interesting about him is I actually, part of me just, I find him very irritating. I don't know what it is. I think it's just his face. I really do not like the man's face. Everything about it makes me want to hate him. And then I look at the tattoos and I'm like, all right, they are pretty cool. I'll give you that. And then I hear him talk and I'm like, ah, you actually sound like a nice guy. You look like a dick because of your face, but you actually sound like a really nice guy. And the more I look into him, the more I'm like, I think he might be all right. But I still can't like him. And it's only because of his face. He's got a very small face and I just can't help but dislike it. I've tried. And I think he's probably lovely. But my instant reaction is to dislike him, Steve. And I can't get over that, I'm afraid. That is a problem with me. It's not a problem with him. But I am struggling with it.
Oh, I feel we should probably leave this here.
You're like, Tim, you've had too much beer. Stop ranting here. Let's get back to Moto3. So Moto3 it is then, Steve. It's not quite as close, or it's not looking quite as close as Moto2, but there are still 12 riders covered by less than a second. And, you know, Moto3, how many guys do you think going into a Moto3 season you could look at and be like, they're in for the title? 5 guys? 10 guys?
Yeah. 5 to 10, safely. But this year, I don't know. We always say, like, there's X amount of guys within a second of each other. When it gets to race day, anything goes on. And we always end up with that massive 12-bike freight train, which just looks incredible. And you can't help but be glued to the screen. You sit there and you look, just this gormless look of expression on your face. You're like, don't blink. You'll miss 5 overtakes.
And that's the cool thing with Moto 3, isn't it? Because you can, if, and I've done it before, where I've been watching Moto 3 and I've texted you and been like, Steve, mate, this race is fucking insane. Are you watching this? And then I'll look up and I'm like, oh my God, the top five have all changed positions in the time it took me to send a 3-line text. I'm like, how has this even happened?
You can't look away. It's so, so good.
Yeah.
You know, MotoGP, we get used to a little, I want to say freight train, but a split freight train, where you get a bit of time and nothing, sometimes not a lot happens. Mm-hmm. In Moto3, you just daren't take your eyes off it. You know, you could be dying for a pee, and no one ever wants to hit live pause on the Sky button because then you know you're behind.
But that's all right. You can just fast forward the podium. And while the podiums are sometimes fun, they're usually pretty boring.
They are pretty boring, but I'm that person. I cannot watch it. Recorded. I try not to watch it recorded. I get very antsy. And if I'm there and I have the ability to watch it live and that button just does not get pressed, I'm like sitting there dying for a pee. I'm like, find me a bottle and leave the room.
Oh, good Lord. But yes, I think Moto3 is going to be a great, great season this year. There's some really interesting rookies coming up, guys that have crushed CEV. They've crushed the Junior World Championship. Mm. Guys that have come up through Red Bull rookies and really crushed it. It's going to be very interesting this year. I think, while I'm not, I don't think a rookie is going to go and win the title, I think some of the rookies this year are going to be well in contention for race wins. I think some of them are going to finish absolutely well inside the top 10.
Yeah, they will have an impact on the title this year. Mm. You know, they're not just going to come up and circulate. They are going to come up and their standings are going to influence what happens at the end of the year.
Yeah.
With the championship, that is. It's going to be good. We are in a very lucky position this year. As long as nothing changes, nothing goes on, and we get to Friday and it's all happy days, it's going to be fucking awesome.
Yes, that it is, exactly. And we will see it very soon, Steve. Right, let's keep going then. We'll get through this eventually, Steve. I thought this was going to be a short show, Steve. I'm looking at the time.
Never is.
Never is a short show anymore. I think the problem is I drink, and when I get a drink, can't even speak the words anymore, Steve. When I drink, I get a bit excited, and when I get excited, I think people want to listen to me talk. And sometimes, Steve, I look at you, and you did it to me earlier when you were like, right, let's stop now, where you just roll your eyes. I can see that I'm going, and I can see that I'm talking and spouting and getting excited, and I can see you don't care, which also means no one else cares, and I can't help myself. So I apologise now. Let's move on.
If I would not even know that I've rolled my eyes at you.
I'm quite adept at noticing when people roll their eyes at me, actually. It's quite common. I think I can probably even feel the fact that people in the future are rolling their eyes listening to this podcast, Steve. That's how adept I am with it. So we got sent a MotoGP predictor website into the Facebook group. And this is a very interesting website, Steve. Have you been on this?
I've given it a little tickle. I haven't given it a full bore massage yet.
Cheeky. Well, I actually had it up in front of me and it was looking fine. There it is. It's just reloaded. It's fine. And then my webpage tried to refresh and then I lost everything, but it's come back. We're okay. The computer is dealing with things. But this is an interesting site. So this guy has built this predictor. He's input old data as well as track data. There's a lot going on in this algorithm to try and work out who's going to do what this year. And I was looking through it. And although I think you only have to look at some of the numbers in it to know that it's not going to be a correct idea. And this, the idea of this is it's going to tell you who's going to win the next race. The graph I'm looking at right now says current MotoGP rider rankings and probability of winning the next race. So according to this predictor, Steve, who is your favourite to win the first race in Qatar?
Miller.
Jack Miller here. Okay, so Jack Miller on this predictor has been given a 9.3% chance of winning the race, which sounds low, but actually looks like he's the third highest overall. Alex Rins seems to be the favourite at a 13.8% chance, followed by Franco Morbidelli at a 12.9% chance. Johan Mir only seems to have a 6.8% chance of winning the race. It's a fun one. I think it's a lot of bullshit at the moment because sport at this level can't be predicted by the supercomputers that we have today. And this probably isn't
even a supercomputer. They're not advanced enough to run it all.
Exactly. But you only have to look a bit further down the grid to realise that there are some glaring errors with this. Ranked in 22nd place overall is Francesco Bagnaia, who's riding for the Factory Ducati team, who's only been given a 1.1% chance of winning at Qatar. You only have to look at Andrea Bastianini and Jorge Martin, who are rookies in the class, to see that they've been given a 1.2% chance each. So I'm already finding glaring issues here, because Bagnaia, to me, is arguably, I don't know, a 1 in 8, 1 in 10 favourite to win the race?
So is this 100% split over all riders?
Yes.
Right. And I suppose the trouble is we don't actually know what this is based on, how it's been calculated.
Historical data and it's track data, how well the teams go at certain tracks, and it's all a computer doing the work here. It's very interesting. I'll put a link to it into the show notes for you guys to look at, those of you who haven't seen it in the Facebook group yet. While I look at the numbers and I think there is a lot of bullshit there, it will be very interesting to see how it plays out over the year and who finishes where for those reasons.
Is it new this year?
I would guess not, looking at the picture that they've used for their banner image, which is Dovi on a Repsol Honda being followed by Rossi and Lorenzo, both on Fiat Yamahas. And Lorenzo has a Captain America helmet on.
2008?
It must be around then. For Dovi to still... Yeah, it must be around that. Somewhere between 2008 and 2011, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. Off the top of my head. That does sound a bit funky. There's a lot of... That sounds like there's going to be a lot of teething issues. I want to say teething issues, but with that's the picture they're using, then it's well past its infancy.
Yeah, I don't think it's a new site at all. It's certainly new to me. But I don't think it's a new thing. But it will be interesting to see how it follows. And I did say in the Facebook group, if this has got it bang on right this year and it all looks right, I will be betting big money in whatever this tells me to bet on next year.
Damn right. Absolutely damn right. We'll keep a little eye on it. You know, this could be the sports almanac.
The future almanac. I like that.
Aye. Yes. As long as Doc and Marty don't show up and nick it, it'll be all right.
So check it out. I think it will be interesting to see and just see what happens throughout, but I've enjoyed looking at it and picking holes in it so far.
We like picking holes in things.
It's just what I'm good at, Steve. I'm just not very good at being told things. I like to find problems with things I'm told.
There, dude, nothing wrong with it.
Okay, so let's move on, Steve. Before we get into the race preview, I would just like to mention one quick mention, I guess. I'd like to mention one quick mention. I can't even use my words tonight, Steve. Too much of the beer, too much of the wine. It's not going well for me. Drive to Survive on Netflix, anyway. Have you watched it?
Not yet. I'm saving it.
Oh, saving it. It's good, man. It's really... I enjoyed it. It came out on Friday, and by Sunday, I'd seen it all. I had a couple of late nights just up drinking, watching it. It was great. Really enjoyed it. Not as good as the previous two seasons.
No.
But still great, and still scratched the racing itch. And I'm actually probably going to, while the show is processing and stuff tonight, after I've done the edits, I will probably sit and watch another episode, even though I've already watched it. So it is certainly worth it.
Why not? I'm a bit of a binger, so I've saved the lot so far. I've got all three seasons to watch.
Ooh, it's definitely worth watching now then, because, if you've got three of them to go. And I guess for anyone who doesn't know what Drive to Survive is, because you're living under a rock, it is the Netflix Formula One series, where it just follows each season follows a year of Formula One. And it's just very good. Very dramatised in this final season, but very good still.
We'll give it a watch. I like to binge that. I don't like having to wait. I'm very patient when it comes to that kind of things.
That's fair. Maybe one day, Steve, when we run out of content, we'll just do a review show of Drive to Survive in case anyone's interested in Formula One, which they're probably not. So let's move on.
Why not? I've still got all of Walking Dead to watch, actually. I haven't started that yet.
I can't bring myself to do it, man. I watched it up until maybe season 7, maybe season 8. And then it kind of felt a bit samey. It got a bit much. There's very, aside from Game of Thrones, obviously, there's very few seasons or shows that I'm willing to watch if I know there's 8 or 9 seasons to go. If there's more than 3 seasons at a time, I'm like, too much of a commitment. I've missed the boat on it and I'm never going to catch up.
Yeah, I watched 2 seasons, then I got bored of it and I just thought, right, let's give it till it's over and then we'll have a look. And then I'll make my choice. But I'm pretty sure I'm going to get about as far as I'm going to go, zombies.
Yeah, exactly. Is it over now? Is Walking Dead done?
No, it's still going.
So, have you watched Sons of Anarchy, Steve?
Yes.
All the way?
Yes.
Okay, good. Because if you hadn't, I was going to suggest that because I think it's a great TV series anyway, but it also has one of the finest final episodes of any TV series. It's a final episode that is worthy of being the final episode. I get very frustrated with things. Lost and Dexter are prime examples of
Jesus
this.
Jesus Christ, Lost.
Exactly. That's what happens when you roll your eyes, you get raging, you're annoyed already that you remember how bad that final episode was. But not so with Sons of Anarchy. As you know, I think it was a very, very fitting ending to a very good series.
That was bloody good. Lost, I absolutely love Lost. I was on edge waiting for that every week. And then that happened. And I just sat there. And you know when it's just your pizza has arrived and the bastard has shaken the box.
I like
that's
that you're
what it's like.
I enjoy the idea of delivery pizza. I wish I could get a pizza delivery.
I'll post you one.
Oh, mate, that'll become very shaken. I'll just be raging at you. And I'll be like, it's like the last fucking last episode of Lost. Not worth it. The thing is with Lost is I watched it years later. And I just watched all 6 seasons in, I don't know, 2 weeks or something. I stayed up. I was unemployed. I'd just finished college. I had very little to do with my time rather than enjoy the fact that I had an unlimited supply of beer and actually an unlimited supply of drugs. So I just quite enjoyed Lost for 2 weeks, just watched the lot. And then by the end of the 2 weeks, obviously the last episode happened. And I was like, oh my good Lord, what the fuck have I just wasted 2 weeks doing?
Yep. Exactly the same. Without the booze and drugs.
Yeah, well, I think maybe I did it better.
I think you probably did. It probably helped you.
Yes, certainly.
We watched it all the other year. I made Sarah watch it. I was like, this is going to be great. Everyone said how good it was. And we got to the end. We were like, fucking waste of life.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But let's not keep talking about Lost.
Off topic, badly.
Exactly. So let's dive into our race preview, shall we?
Go for it.
Good stuff. So
looking forward to this bit.
I'm looking forward to this bit. This is just going to be a quick take. I thought this was going to, like I say, I thought the whole show was going to be quite short tonight, Steve, but it's not been. So we'll see how long the race preview takes. So we are at Lasail International Circuit in Qatar for the next round. And we've got 2 weeks worth of racing here, Steve. We've got this weekend coming and the following weekend.
I'm quite looking forward to that fact. I like Qatar, but I've got a feeling by race two, I'm going to be a little bit lights are boring now.
I'm not sure. It depends how good the first race is for me. If the first race is great, I'm going to be stoked for the second race. If the first race is shit, I'm already going to be fed up and I'm going to want to see Portimao.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to Portimao. And I think that's half the trouble. If it was like race one and two was at Portimao, I'd be stoked.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
It's just that little bit of sometimes, like last year, we saw race two could get a little bit like samey. I'm just a bit worried it could get like that.
Yeah,
Sorry.
No, I'd say I don't know. I kind of disagree. I think they're going to be two very different races week to week.
I think they'll be two very different races. If they are all good and well, but that's my fear. If they're not, they're going to be very samey and that could get a bit boring.
Yeah, we'll certainly have to see what happens. I think KTM are a nice way that I don't think the race is going to get boring because I don't think KTM are going to perform in the first race. However, we saw historically last year that when we had two races at the same circuit, KTM performed very, very well in the second race. So I think that even if both races are boring, the progression of seeing KTMs just outside the top 10 to maybe fighting for the top 5 could be quite interesting.
Yeah, I think you're right on that one. It will be interesting. It'll be good to see.
Yes, it certainly will do.
And it's under light, so that's always pretty good.
It's going to make the colours look good, Steve. That's the important thing. The colours are going to look good. And it's just the fact, actually, I don't really care. The first week, it could be a shit race. The bikes could all look crap. But I'm just going to be excited to see bikes back on track.
Exactly. The first weekend, we're just going to be like, if we won, yeah, okay, that's all good and well. Let's get to Sunday. Let's get to the business end of this.
Yeah, exactly. So first free practice starts at 20 to 4 local time in Qatar, and that is GMT plus 3. I'm not going to read out every time zone where they start, because I'm just going to get confused. Exactly, and I'm going to get confused with what the time is. I can barely tell the time now, Steve, let alone when I'm trying to add them minus hours all over the place, which is why I've written everything down in front of me.
Yes, yeah, I'm glad you did, because I was starting to look at all the times. I was like, this is going to take a while. You know, we have a lot of American listeners, a lot of Canadian listeners, a lot of Aussie listeners. This could take a bit.
We're just quite fortunate that Greenwich Mean Time, literally the time that you and I spend 6 months of the year in, is known as the zero time. We are very fortunate in that
That's
aspect.
Pretty damn lucky. The bloke who came up with that was like, where are we going to put ourselves? Well, fucking zero.
Yeah, exactly. We are clearly zero. Fuck everyone else. We want it easy. A very British way of doing things, actually.
Yeah, my phone is literally full of places that you've been.
You can see what time it is wherever you're texting me.
Yeah, if I go into it, I go into World Clock. It is literally a long list of Tim's locations.
Well, that makes me feel quite good in a way. It means I'm quite exciting as a human being, I think.
That was from your own personal help when you were traveling. So it's like, what time are we recording this week? Shit.
Yeah, exactly. There's a few occasions where I text you and be like, right, we'll record at 3 o'clock in the afternoon my time, which I think is maybe 8 o'clock at night your time, possibly. You'd be like, no, Tim, it's 6 o'clock at night. I'm like, fuck, I need to find somewhere else.
Yeah. Wasn't there once or twice where we were like waiting at different times?
Yeah, probably. That does sound about right.
Yeah, I remember texting you, I think it was you were in Lima, somewhere like that. And like, I was sitting there waiting, and you were like, no, it's another hour. I was like, oh.
Shit.
Close laptop.
All right, I'll come back and talk to him later then. Anyway, Q1, this is all MotoGP times we're talking. So obviously, Moto2 and Moto3 will be taking place before and earlier than these times. You can find the full times on the MotoGP website. But we'll just run through the MotoGP times now. Anyway, so Q1 takes place 8 o'clock local time on the Saturday. Again, GMT plus 3, with Q2 taking place at 25 minutes past 8. And then we get to Sunday, we get to race day. And this is where things get confusing, Steve, because the clocks in the UK change.
They go forward by 1 hour. They spring forward.
They do, exactly. So the race takes place at 8 o'clock local time in Qatar. It's still GMT plus 3. However, Steve, you and I will now be living in BST as of 1 o'clock that morning, just to confuse things.
It's so annoying. I hate the daylight saving crap.
We did have a little Google, didn't we, before the show. What's the point of fucking British summer saving times? Like daylight saving times. That's what I'm going for.
A bit of an eye-opener for me, because I was convinced we were the only country that did it, or nation, UK, that did it. And then it turns out nearly fucking everyone does it. I got very confused when I started reading American stuff. I was like, eh?
Yeah, but I think everyone does it on a slightly different date as well, just to confuse things a bit more.
None of it's the same. I just got very confused, shut the phone down, was like, I'm blaming farmers.
Yeah, that's what I was always brought up being told what's to do with the farmers. Yeah, but why? It was just to do with the farmers, Tim. My whole childhood was me asking why and being told it's to do with the farmers.
That's it. I'm blaming farmers.
Yeah, we just blame the farmers.
Aye.
So anyway, Steve, that is the time for the racing. It's going to be some exciting races, but let's dive into the circuit stats, shall we, for the LaSalle International Circuit.
Go for it.
So it's a 3.34-mile circuit. For those of you that speak metric, that's 5.4 kilometres. It's got 16 corners in total, 6 left-handers, 10 right-handers. The width of the track kind of blew me away a little, Steve. Mm. 12 metres wide, this track. That's wide, man. I went out to the road and the road outside here is no real example because it's a single-track road. A normal A road... For example, in the UK, the A road on Sky at least is less than 6 meters wide for both lanes, which means this circuit is at least twice that width.
Yeah, I paced it out in the cul-de-sac, just standard UK cul-de-sac. My cul-de-sac is 15 meters wide.
Isn't that amazing to think the circuit is only 3 meters narrower? Sure.
yeah,
than your cul-de-sac. And you live in a wide cul-de-sac, 15 meters, as we've just learned.
Yeah, I paced it out. I was like, Jesus, that's some width. And when we see, like, you understand them when they're 4 or 5 bikes abreast, go like, especially in Moto 2, you look at how much space they've got and you think, actually, that's a bloody big track.
It is, but it sort of makes you wonder why they struggle to overtake sometimes, because you're like, you've got so much fucking room.
Optimum racing line, though, isn't it? Everyone's stuck in one little position. But it got me thinking as well, like, about the tracks in the UK, the domestic tracks. It's like Knock Hill. They're in places are fucking tiny. They're about like a single lane road.
Yeah, it's funny to think, isn't it, the difference in the tracks. Like somewhere like this, Qatar, a purpose-built circuit, the entire track is measured out to be 12 metres wide all the way around. But then you get to some of the older, and especially with European circuits, and I think that's just because that's where the money was, that's where the circuits were built throughout a lot of history. But a lot of those older circuits, they do, you're right, they shrink down to 2, maybe 3 metres wide, and then we'll open up again to 5, 6, 7 metres wide, and then shrink back down. They're never as uniform, and they're never 12 metres wide.
No, if you put a 12 metre wide, if you were to bring the whole of Basail over here and dump it on, and made it every UK domestic racetrack that size, would just be flooded.
Oh, mate, there's no racetrack room. You and I obviously have been to Silverstone a few times. No, Silverstone, sorry, to Snetterton a few times. And Snetterton is a small domestic track in the UK.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know, maybe 4 metres wide, 5, 6 metres at most?
I think it's 5.
Okay, there we go. So less than half this.
It's tiny. It is so, so tiny. It's repurposed RAF base, isn't it?
Yeah, and as are many of the racetracks in the UK, to be fair.
A lot are. Silverstone is.
Yeah.
Silverstone was a World War II aircraft base.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's mostly what our stuff is. But they are diddy. When you start looking at our domestic circuits, and compare that to some, like, domestic circuits in the US, I'd be interested to find out, some of them look huge.
But I think a lot of them are also quite small, to be fair.
I think they
are. Laguna is compared to 12 metres in width, Laguna is thin as well. And Laguna is probably one of the most famous, aside from Indy, probably the most famous American racetrack.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But no, 12 metres took me by surprise. I did not expect it to be that wide.
Yeah, me neither. But also, the longest straight on this circuit, Steve, is just over a kilometre long at 1,068 metres. Interesting that when it becomes metres, I can talk in metric, but as soon as we stretch to miles, I'm like, no, I need imperial now.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
We do the same thing at work. All my work measurements are millimetres, but then everything else, miles.
Yeah, it's weird. Miles is a weird one. I don't know why we've not let go of miles, but I feel very attached to miles and I can't really let go of them.
No, I get that. You throw a kilometre at me and I'm a bit like, hang on, got to do the math. Not really sure. The only
No, carry on. I was going to go well off topic.
I'm going off topic as well. The only thing I really know about kilometers is my old 400cc Honda was all in kilometers.
Oh, did it not even have miles on the gauge?
No, it had an overlay sticker.
Nice.
Yes, but I've worked out that 100 kilometers is roughly 60 miles an hour.
Yeah, all I know is the 5 to 8 rule, so 5 miles is 8 kilometers.
Yeah.
That's literally all I know, aside from that. It's funny, when I walk and when I'm hiking, I measure my hiking in kilometers, but when I drive, I measure it in miles.
I noticed that actually when we were walking the coast, you kept mentioning kilometers.
Yeah.
And I stood there and was like, hang on, math. Yep, weird.
Yeah, I don't know why I do it. I think part of it, I think, is because that means for every 5 miles I walk, I've walked 8 kilometers. So it feels like a bigger number. I think sounds that's bad. Part of it.
Big job.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, yeah, smashed out 10 kilometers. What's that? 6 and a bit miles.
Yeah, that's not that great.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so Lasalle International Circuit, the track is in the middle of the desert, Steve, and it's surrounded by artificial grass that is designed to prevent the sand blowing in over the circuit, which I guess might work, but judging by testing, probably when the weather really picks up, doesn't work at all.
I'd imagine if it's just like a normal little breeze blowing the sand off, yeah, it will work. It will do its job. But when we get a good breeze, a good wind, like we see it at the start of testing, it ain't going to do that much.
No, exactly. I guess the fact of the matter is if the wind is blowing the sand more than a few centimetres above the ground, then the grass does nothing anyway.
No, the grass is just going to look at it and go, well, job's done for the day.
Yeah, exactly.
Have a rest, lads.
And it's quite a flowing track, Steve. There's not a lot of heavy braking zones. There's not a lot of stop, turn, go. Which actually makes it quite interesting that the Ducati, as we will get onto, has been quite the favourite bike here.
Yeah, it goes against the grain, doesn't it? It's not what you would call a Ducati track.
Mm.
You think stop, start, point and squirt. But this is not your typical Ducati track, but it is somewhere they just do well.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is to just do with the length of the straights that are there. As we say, the longest straight is just over a kilometre, but there's other straights there too. So they can really, you know, get the power out down of that Ducati, yeah.
Exactly. They don't need the flowing corners. They can still utilise what they got.
Yeah, exactly. So this track first appeared on the calendar in 2004, and in 2008 it became the first night race in MotoGP. Mm. This is the track that we know and love for being under the lights, Steve. We've discussed it already in this show, we've discussed it in the past as well. It makes the liveries pop, it makes everything great. It's a really nice introduction and first race of the year, every year, because it just looks spectacular.
It does, mate. It's a real nice show opener. You know, it's when you go to the theatre and the first act is freaking amazing. This is that. You know, everything looks good under the lights. I really, really wish the whole thing was held under lights, Moto3, Moto2, and MotoGP. But temperatures, condensation just won't allow it, because I'd love to see some of those Moto3 guys under the lights.
Yeah, that's fair. So the Moto3 guys normally take place and it's daylight. For Moto2, it's normally twilight, and then MotoGP is nighttime.
Dew point has come down, lights are on, and it just looks fucking epic.
Although, do you remember, like, every year it got brought earlier and earlier by about an hour, didn't it? Because that dew point where all of a sudden it would be like 8 laps till the end of the MotoGP race, and then because the temperature's dropped all of a sudden, there's a lot of moisture formed on the surface of the track, and all of a sudden it's slick, and you would see, you know, 5, 6, 7 riders go down within 2 or 3 laps of each other.
Yeah, I can remember camera shots showing, like, the pit wall and the glass would start to condensate. So they kept moving the times earlier just to make it a little bit safer, which is understandable.
Well, 100% exactly. So across the period that we've had racing Qatar, the most wins go to both Valentino Rossi and Casey Stoner at 4 apiece. Jorge Lorenzo has taken 3 wins there. So, you know, in the 16 years that it's been in existence, 3 guys have taken 11 of the wins.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It's a lot. And, you know, there's no Jorge Lorenzo this year. There's no Casey Stoner this year. Does this mean Valentino Rossi's the favourite? No, 100% no, it does not mean that whatsoever. But, you know, he's a very experienced man around this racetrack. And he did go faster in this year's testing than he'd ever been around this racetrack before. He was also the slowest of the Yamahas to do that, but that's not the point.
Yeah, that's by the by. He was bloody quick still.
Yeah, exactly. He's quick. He's an old boy. He was quick for an old boy.
Yeah, you know, he'd had a Red Bull and he was off.
Yeah, I think he probably had a Monster, actually. I don't think he's sponsored by Red Bull.
That's what, yeah, Monster and a Viagra and that boy was gone.
Yeah, exactly.
He had a place to be.
So the outright lap record around Qatar is by Marc Marquez in 2019. This was during the practice sessions. He did a 153.3 around the track. The race lap record goes to Jorge Lorenzo, who set it in 2016, and it was a 154.9. So you can already see the race lap record is at least 1.6 seconds slower than the outright lap record. And the pole record goes to Maverick Vinales from 2019, who scored a 153.5 around the track.
Quick. Very quick.
Yes, exactly. And in the last few years, it has been a very Ducati circuit. We've already mentioned Dovi's won the last two races in a row. Obviously not 2020, because there was no 2020 race there. He won the 2018 and the 2019 race.
Yeah.
But Yamaha have had success there too. They won in 2015, 16 and 17. Different riders every year, interestingly. It was Valentino Rossi in 2015. It was Jorge Lorenzo in 2016. And it was Maverick Vinales in 2017 on what was the beginning of that tear where I really thought Maverick Vinales was going to go and smash the season.
Yeah, didn't happen.
No, it didn't happen, sadly. Honda haven't won a race since 2014 at Qatar, and that was when Marc Marquez was on the first of his 10 races on the bounce winning streak.
Yeah, that's when the year everyone was like, yeah, he's got his win. Now he won't have any more for a bit.
Yeah, he had his championship in his rookie year, and then he went just boom, lads, this is how it's done. And the whole world just stopped and paused. I remember there was that moment, wasn't there, in 2014, where you were watching him do it and you were like, oh my good God, I cannot believe this is happening. And people then were talking about him as the rival to Valentino Rossi, as the greatest of all time. I don't think we expected him to get as far as he's got.
Not at all, mate. I think just coming out of the box and being that sensation and winning it in the first year was enough. But then everyone has a good season. So everyone was like, right, he's kind of fluked it. He's got to back it up this year. But he backed it up by absolutely decimating everything.
Exactly. You know,
everyone expected him to come out and have to really push and battle. They didn't expect him to come out and just show, like, just sit down and went, hold my beer, watch this.
Yeah, exactly. He's just one of those guys. It's a once-a-generation talent, Steve. That's all you can say about him, I think.
Proper, proper phenom.
Exactly. So then the race distance for MotoGP is 22 laps. They cover 73.5 miles or 118.4 kilometres. Moto2 is slightly less, as you'd expect. 20 laps, 66.8 miles, 107.6 kilometres. And Moto3, one less again. 18 laps, 60.1 miles, 96.8 kilometres. I've just noticed, Steve, quite often when I make a mistake when we're talking and recording, I put a finger up as if to tell you, yeah, I know I've made a mistake, I'm about to remedy it. But I also assume that the listeners can see me doing that, which clearly they cannot.
Just to let you know, we can't see it because your hand's out of the screen.
Oh, great. So a lot of the motions I make that I think you can see, you can't actually see at all.
No.
Oh, God, well, that's embarrassing. Let's move on. Steve. It's come to that time, my friend. We spent last year doing this. We've not really made solid predictions for a single race this year. So we've hit that point. Who, your prediction for the podium this year, Steve, at Qatar Race 1, go.
Miller, Rins, Mir.
Oh, Miller, Rins, Mir. Right, I am thinking it's going to be a Miller win. I think it's going to be Miller, Paul, Zarco.
Ooh, like it. I think Zarco could be a dark horse this year.
I think Zarco is going to... I think this year for Zarco is going to be very similar to Zarco's first year in the class, where he will score... He'll be on the podium in at least a third of the races, and I think he's going to threaten for wins, but I don't think he's going to quite do it. However, I am almost convinced he's going to do better than Bagnaia across the year, and he's going to give Ducati a headache.
Yes, yeah, I'm pretty sure you're right with that one, mate. It's going to be good. It's just going to be... Don't get me started.
Fair enough. Okay, guys, if you've got predictions for the show, for the race, then you should join our fantasy league. Now, if you're listening to this show on the day it comes out, or maybe the day after, you've still got a chance to be in for the entire season in the fantasy league. Guys, go to the official MotoGP website, navigate your way towards the fantasy league, and use the code 79WJKYN7. That will give you access to our fantasy league. However, if you can't be able to do all that, I will also put the link in the show notes. So you'll be able to join the fantasy league there. There you can compete with, at the moment, what I believe is 21 people, Steve?
Yeah, we have 21 entrants this year so far, which is already far more than we had last year. So that's good.
Yes, exactly. It is good. This year we're doing full-on actual prizes for the top three. And I think we should probably, Steve, it's the last show before the season starts. So we will tell you all what the prizes are.
Go for it, mate. Drop it on them.
So you guys have seen our podcast logo. You know Steve and I on that logo are made out to be Simpsons characters riding MotoGP bikes. What we want to do this year for the top three places is make you customized t-shirts. We will have you as individual people turned into Simpsons, dressed in your favorite MotoGP leathers throughout the era, standing on the podium in first, second, or third position as Simpsons characters. Steve and I will be off in the background somewhere, both embarrassingly holding the signs for the positions that we came in, which I'm sure will not be the top three.
I'm pretty sure we're going to be well down the order this year, mate.
That's it. I'm pretty convinced as well. And on the back of the t-shirt, I'm planning to create almost like, you know, when you go to a gig or you're at a festival, you have the dates in which they were at which venues. Well, we will have the championship order running down the back of the t-shirt as well. So you will always know where you finished, and it will be in the top three if you've got the t-shirt. So come with us and get on board with it. It's going to be a fun year, I think. Steve, I've already actually fully committed to a Jack Miller win because I've already given him my boost for the first race of the year. I'm fully committing to it because I want to get out ahead and I want to start in front because I think if I can get a lead, I can maintain a lead. But I just need to get the lead. I'm a bit like a Yamaha.
Yeah, see, I used my boost quite early in the season last year, but I think I might have to go along the... Sassy Lassie route and save a couple for the end.
Yeah, because that really paid off for her last year.
That did pay off. That was a very, very wise move. So I think I'm going to be hesitant this year and not use them up too quick.
Yeah, we've two very different schools of thought, eh? I'm going to go in guns blazing. You're going to be the Johann Mir. Let's be sensible. Let's do this slowly.
Yeah, I think that is probably the way forward.
That's it. And I think after every race, we will run through at least the top 10 in our championship to see where we are and where everyone's doing at the moment. I was thinking about running through everyone right now, but actually I think this has already been a long enough show and I don't think many of you really care enough for me to bother doing that. To be honest, there's some fun names in there now, but we will go through them. We'll go through them when we've got a shorter show and I'll read through everyone. But right now, I don't want to bore you all more than I have to. So, guys, I think, Steve, have you got any final thoughts, or does that bring us to the end of the show?
I think that's it, mate. I can't think of anything else to go on with, except roll on Friday, and let's just enjoy it. It's going to be a cracking season. We're all here for the same reason. We love it. It's going to happen.
Exactly. This circus of petrol and rubber is what we all really want to see. So it's soon here, very soon, Steve. Next time we talk to you guys, we will have literally seen a race and I'm stoked for it. I cannot wait. I'm so, so excited now. I've even started waving my arms around slightly faster than you.
He's off. Steve. He's going.
This is just too much for me. I'm going to have to go out for a jog after this. I'm obviously not going to go out for a jog after this.
A steady walk, should we say?
I'm not even going to do that, Steve. I'm going to edit the show and I'm probably going to sit on the sofa and watch another episode of Drive to Survive.
Why not? I'm not sure what I'm going to do.
I assume you've got work in the morning?
Probably not. I'm not sure yet.
Guys, that'll fucking do.
Yeah, so we'll see. Well, I don't know.
Gone.
Well, it's my oyster tonight. I didn't realize. Actually, you've just thrown me right off. I didn't realize I have a free evening. Well, it's evening night now.
There you go. Play some Xbox, mate, and get ready for the MotoGP esports season.
Yes. Yeah, I might have to boot that bad boy up.
Happy days. Right, guys, if you've got any questions for us, you want to tell us about your team for the Fantasy League, you want to tell me why my idea of putting everything in on Miller is wrong out of the gate, or you want to tell Steve why maybe he should be putting everything on Miller out of the gate and shouldn't be doing the Johann Mir conservative thing here, then you can find us on...
We are For the Love of MotoGP, and you can come and find us on Instagram and Twitter, or find us doubly on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, we have a Facebook community. Hit us up, come and join in the conversation, or if you want to drop us an email, we are For the Love of MotoGP @gmail.com.
That was smooth as fuck, Steve. Smooth as fuck. And actually, in the last few weeks, we've had a lot more listeners come on board.
We have.
Which is very good, very exciting. But some of those might not know why I keep complimenting you on being able to get the email address right.
That's because every now and again, I like to fuck it up. I try and turn it into a website.
Yeah, very often. It happens quite a lot.
I don't know why. It seems to be a mental block thing where all of a sudden I'll just go, we are For the Love of MotoGP .com. Yeah. I'm just like, fuck you, Gmail. I don't want you anymore.
Yeah.
Don't know why. It just happens. And it's always when I'm on a roll, I think I get complacent.
The thing is, it happens, and it will happen for 2, 3, 4 weeks in a row, and then you won't do it for 3 or 4 months, and then it'll happen again.
And when I drop it, it's a biggie.
Yeah.
And Tim, you can see Tim's face in the little teeny tiny box that he's minimised on the screen. He's like that. He's done it.
Yeah, I have a moment of shock and then a moment of pure elation.
Yeah, he's fucked it.
Yes. So guys, and like Steve says, we do have the Facebook community over there, and we have been, it's been a fun place. It's getting more and more fun. More people are getting involved with the chats. And actually, Steve, you and I are considering, aren't we, doing some live sessions. We had a few people about whether we're going to have like a back and forth with the audience with chats, and we can do it all on Facebook. We could do it on Discord. I don't know, it's undecided. We've not really chatted into that too deeply yet, but yes, we are thinking maybe monthly live sessions throughout the season where we can just come on, we can chat with you all, we'll have a discussion about what's going on in MotoGP. We can just drink. I do that anyway. Steve started doing that anyway, which is a fucking revelation. It's great fun for all involved. So it, and you guys can have a beer with us.
But judging by your fridge, you could basically serve the beer to everyone.
Yeah, so I've got 2 crates of Tennent's in there, plus I've also got however many spirits, and I've got my Diet Coke ready for my mixing of the spirits, because, you know, gotta watch your weight, Steve.
No, gotta keep the diet down.
I just quite like Diet Coke, to be fair.
I was really hoping when I saw that picture of the fridge, I was just expecting like one little sample of food to be in there.
No, I only showed you the drink shelves. So that was 3 shelves of drinks, and then I've got maybe 4 shelves above that of food, and then I've got the shelf of like condiments and milk, and then some other bottles that I can't leave on their side.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. It's a rare occasional drink. I'm quite enjoying this. I might have to get some more.
Maybe that's why the show that we thought, that I genuinely thought, Steve, it was going to be a 45-minute show. We've dragged it on for nearly 2 hours. So
Jesus.
Yeah, it's quite a long one. Although we took a break in that, so I guess it's going to be close to 1 hour and 45 by the time everyone's listening. But guys, thank you all very, very much if you made it this far. Because honestly, there wasn't a lot of MotoGP today. I feel like there was just a lot of chat and shit interspersed with the odd MotoGP comment.
We're building them up to it. We're keeping them in suspense. It's like that fill-in show in a series where you just, we're paving the way for next week.
Oh, it's like a Game of Thrones episode where all they do is talk, but that just sets you up for the next 4 episodes.
Next week's going to be a biggie. We've got racing back. It is going to be like Battle of the Bastards. Boom.
Happy days. And there it is, guys. Thank you very much for listening. We are self-proclaimed the Game of Thrones of MotoGP. We're not actually the Game of Thrones of MotoGP podcast at all. That's an absolute lie. I'm going to put that one away right now. But thank you all very much for listening anyway. We really do appreciate it, guys. Come and join us in the Facebook community over there. It's been great, great fun. And I guess, guys, next time we talk to you, there will have been motorbikes riding around a track, and it's going to be amazing. I cannot wait. I'm like a kid at Christmas. It's maybe the most exciting thing that's happened to me all year. No, it's definitely the most exciting thing that's happened to me all year. I can't wait, guys, and I can't wait to share it with you, Steve, and I cannot wait to share it with you guys out there listening. So come and join us in the Facebook group, and we can all chat about it for days.
Happy days. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be great, guys. Thank you very, very much for listening. We will speak to you all next week. Goodbye.
Take care, guys.
Music is by Andrew Greenwood. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.